Alrighty, it's time for us to begin. Thank you everybody for coming out this evening to come to our Bible study again. We'll be finishing up in lesson 5 that we started on Sunday morning and using Matthew 5, verses 19 through 20. But before we get started, Seth, could you all prepare for the class? Thank you. So last class we discussed Jesus and his attitude towards the law, the fulfilling of it that he goes through, and starting to establish the new law that he's bringing in through fulfilling the old law. So we'll begin to discuss in verse 19, and I'll probably repeat myself a little bit from where we left off on Sunday, just in the interest of being able to cover it thoroughly. I also, again, have a lot more to just talk about myself in this. I do have questions throughout. So, again, if you have stuff to interject, please do. So we'll start by reading verse 19. Whosoever, therefore, shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So as I said on Sunday, I think this verse is referring to the following of every command as carefully as possible, which is a reflection of whose attitude? Jesus. Yeah, we're reflecting Jesus' attitude in fulfilling the law to the fullness, to the furthest extent that we can possibly do. Jesus fulfilled the old law fully and completely, so to be more like him is to follow his commands as closely as possible, just as he's followed God's commands in fulfilling all the prophecy that's been given before him. Of course, we fail in that regard regularly, which is the exact reason why we need his perfect sacrifice and why we needed a more perfect law that wasn't so contrary or wasn't even so made as contrary by us. You can see a shift that begins in verse 19, as he's changing just slightly from talking about the people, about the multitude that's gathered here, and just starts to talk about teaching and the teachers for verses 19 and 20. And he'll go in through the rest of the sermon talking about the different aspects of what to teach on and stuff. But he, at this point, is directing his thoughts to what these people are being, what they're being taught at the moment. Let's go ahead, turn to 2 Timothy, if you would. 2 Timothy 2, verses 24 through 26. Yeah, he started bringing in the old law now, and after he's brought in the old law, verses 17 and 18, now he's directing to what they've been taught about the old law, about it too. So in verse, so in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 24 through 26, Mom, do you have that? So, in regards to making this reference to this passage, I'm changing to talking about us as teachers as well. So, as you can see, we all must be apt to teach, just as Jesus' point was, and verse 19 and how it applies to all of us. How the fullness of the law is what we need to be able to teach as Christians. And not just to those who are designated as teachers, as with the scribes and Pharisees. I think that was a part of their culture, at least the way it seems, at least the way it reads, of them kind of sectioning off the leaders and the scribes, the lawyers, from the common people. And that was a way of a sign of the times, too, of just the educated being separately from the uneducated. The common people weren't as educated to be able to discern in the same way with their leaders.
I've noticed in this chapter, I taught myself that chapter 2, he talks about different types of relationships that you have with God. The first thing that comes up with in chapter 2, verse 1 and 2 is being a teacher that is a disciple that tries to find people to teach and bring Christ and then teach them to relate to each other. And so teachers really kind of cover there. When you get to the Lord, he really is addressing being a servant of the Lord and the attitude that
Yep, that's certainly an important viewpoint, I think, for us to have as Christians, is the way of doing it, and certainly not the viewpoint of the scribes and Pharisees, as we see and read there, and the actions that Jesus condemns them for, and the mentality that they have about it. So he alludes to this in verse 20 with talking how the quote-unquote common people needing to exceed even the righteousness of their teachers. But there is also the point of knowing enough so that we aren't unwillfully breaking and teaching others of doing the wrong things with the laws that God has given us. This kind of disobedience that's referred to in verse 19 is not reflective of Christ, as we've mentioned. Jesus already has removed the law of works that was made contrary by us and then put us in his law of grace. And then rather having to struggle with sacrificing for removal of our sins, we can focus on the other things. And using the terminology from verse 19, what are the other things to focus on? Doing and teaching. And in particular, verse 19 is focusing on even the least commandments, understanding all the law that would be considered great, that would be considered least, to be able to follow it to the best of our ability and as holy as possible as we can. Along the same principle as the quote-unquote unpardonable sin. It's the mentality that we have of not wanting to follow, not being able to, causing a blockage for ourselves and being able to follow Jesus' law and the way it's laid out for us to do. And to be able to, and teaching others in that same manner. So Christ has made our struggle so much easier than it has to be, than it would be otherwise, because he's paved a way for us to be able to focus on the other parts of the law and not have to worry about the works that we have to do in order to receive righteousness as he's made that sacrifice. Which should encourage that mentality, our obedience and the respect for all of his commands, whether we consider it the least or not. It's not up to us, it's not our authority to determine what's the least or not. And so we must follow all obediently and respectfully, all the commands as obediently and respectfully as Jesus does, as he fulfilled the old law as holy and totally as he did. So do we have any more thoughts about verse 19? All right, we'll go ahead and move on to verse 20 now. For I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. So Jesus uses the first initial phrase, for I say unto you, as a lead-in, meaning it's drawing in from verse 19 too. It's as a continuing thought going through. So we might have sectionalized these as far as for convenience sake in the book, but it's part of the continuing thought, of course. This is about to make reference to how the scribes and Pharisees are going to be the primary teachers. So if anyone was thinking that the do and teach part was going to be just relating to the most righteous of them, then they were wrong. This is going to apply to everyone. So now that brings us to question four in the workbook, if you'd like to go there now. Question number four in the workbook is, who were the scribes and Pharisees? Right. Leaders, teachers, lawyers, those considered educated, those held in high esteem for their following of God's law as they were seen. The pious, the prejudiced, the knowledgeable leaders and law keepers that were there. So then, and certainly confront more people about it than the scribes do. They certainly do ask them questions and try to trap Jesus and what he's saying, but of course they can't. And then the Pharisees do more often, if I'm correct. I do feel like that. Do you have some? Right. Yep. That certainly does seem kind of a focus of the scribes too, and at least in my mind, I'm just realizing now how I've sectionalized them in that way, the Pharisees being kind of more teachers and scribes just kind of keeping the law. In writing it down, I've heard that writing it down is is the same thing as reciting it out loud seven times. So of course they would be the most if you read about it and were writing about it constantly, you would be the most knowledgeable about it, about the letter of the law, about the actual words that were down. So then the second part of question four is, why would a command to exceed their righteousness have been such a challenge to the common people? Sorry, there's one other point that I was going to say out of that. Right. Yeah, this was the point. Yeah, it's kind of an ultimate usage of knowledge not equaling wisdom. Just because you know so much about it doesn't exactly mean that you're able to use it the proper way and use it the right way. And this is a prime example of that turn of phrase, I would say. Yeah, I think that's a good way of describing it, and certainly it's all done in the wrong way. It's not done for God's glory. It's done for their own glory. And Jesus goes into later in the gospel accounts of many times he reminds them of that leading up to his death on the cross. Right. Definitely. Hence the conflict. Yep. So the people, when Jesus said this, were probably thinking and probably very surprised and confused as to how they could surpass the scribes and Pharisees' righteousness, let alone even get to their level. Let's go to Matthew chapter 23, if you turn there now. And we're going to go take a look at the extent of the scribes and Pharisees' righteousness. Matthew chapter 23. And we'll read just verses 23 through 28. Matthew 23, verses 23 through 28. Randy, would you read that for us? Thank you. Yeah, this is just a small snippet, and of course we've gone through this somewhat recently in our Harmony of the Gospels too. So we know this is how condemning of a scolding that Jesus is giving them throughout all of Matthew 23 and his last couple of days and there at the temple. So this is the extent. That we've just read a snippet of the extent of the scribes and Pharisees' righteousness. This is what the common people, quote unquote, need to surpass. This is so you can see that this is much more possible and much less hard than they could have possibly thought. This whole. Which now it leads us to question 5 in the workbook. So question 5 is, where did scribes and Pharisees fall short? Right. Right. Yeah.
And emphasizing how their appearances and what glory they received for enforcing the law. Personal glory, self-righteous, and finally, just leaving all parts of the law that are difficult,
Right. Those are the main, I think those are the highlights of reasons for where they fell short. Of course, you can go to any number of passages where they interact with Jesus and have a specific of what they're looking for. In Matthew 23 is certainly a trove of that. And I think the way that they condemn others on principle and by the letter to follow, followed by their own rules, is why I think many Christians, the name is sullied in today's world. It would be because of those who still have this kind of mentality and condemn on principle, not understanding the full spirit of the law that needs to be understood as far as for teaching and interacting with those who are more ignorant on it. So now you can see, after reading Matthew 23, you can see why their righteousness also had to exceed the scribes and the Pharisees, which is obviously implying what about the scribes and Pharisees in regards to heaven? Right. Yes. Yep. Their attitude and their practice is not going to be accepted in the kingdom. Right. Separated from it, yeah. That's a very interesting application of the way it works backwards. And of course, Jesus plays handles it so perfectly with not provoking them in this way. But for those who are listening and are able to understand it, they're still getting the message that will be more blatant coming in the future. Mm-hmm. Right. Randy, did you have some?
Justice and mercy, these are issues of
said that they didn't need to leave those things undone. And so other people look at it and say, well, you know, you shouldn't, you know, concentrate on these little things, concentrate on the good things. Well, no, you should concentrate on it all. Jesus said you shouldn't have left but the job is undone, and you should do these other things too. So when we focus on attendance, yeah, that's important. When we focus on things that we can outwardly see that in regard to our faithfulness to God, that's important. That, hey, there might be a lot of issues in the heart there that need to be addressed too. And so that's the message of Jesus. It's good to hear that they'll just concentrate on the outside, concentrate on the inside, and that's why.
That's a very good application of it, of not focusing totally on the outside, and that's ultimately to the point of when I think we dealt with this question. Correct me if I'm wrong on when we're having the discussion questions about how to respond to certain things. I don't think this one came up, but. One I've gotten asked before is, do you think that I'm going to hell? And I respond with, I can't make that answer. And I only know the outside. I can only see the outwardly and guess about the inside. And so I rely on God to make that ultimate judgment on that. Of course, He's the perfect judge for it. So, but yes, yeah, certainly because we can only see the outside. And it is also what others see. And that's a point with verse 19 and teaching. If you apply it with teaching through our actions as well, then we need to be aware that others can't see what's inside us either, and so we need to be displaying it outwardly as well in order for others to be able to understand and be drawn to the weightier things that are going on inside our hearts. So, in trying to think of the closest thing for a modern application, in a way that we might be able to see and not to totally rag on the Catholics the entire time, but I think it is the most applicable situation that we can relate it to today is with the Pope and the bishops and their the structure that they've set up. Seems very similar to the scribes and Pharisees and such of that the Jews were having to deal with here. They certainly remind me the most of the way that these Jews were set up like that. And I also happen to know the most about them, so that's why I get drawn to making applications about it. So in the most obvious way is first with Matthew 23:9, you can turn there and read it later, but I'm just referencing. It talks about calling no man your father. Obviously, they do that with their bishops. At which I've never gotten a very clear answer on why or why not they do it. At most, it means call no man your father at all. At least in the context of a position or a title, particularly in a religious sense, and not one that's substituting a relationship like the one we have with God, as God is our only Father. So this will come down to, ultimately, the letter of the law or the spirit of the law, which we've also discussed. But regardless, it's used in the same way, in the same sense as Jesus condemns here in Catholic practice.
I don't think it should surprise us a whole lot,
Right.
do that.
And I make this point because the it's the same sense of the letter and the way that the scribes and Pharisees dealt with the letter and the spirit of the law, focusing on the letter of it and not understanding what the actual application of it needed to be. And then I think a primary problem that they run into is their reliance as on men as their leaders, and not focusing on God. They think of God being overall, and then the Pope being the head of the church after, which is not the case. This is Jesus is the head of the church, and the only head of the church. There's no man who can replace that and take his relationship with us in the way that we need it, so that we can have a relationship with God.
And I doubt this is the case. All the elders are not the real hopes of an individual congregation. That's not the way it's set up. That's not where our authority is. Authority resides with Jesus. If he has authority, it's all over. Until he turns it over. That's where all lies. There's no one on earth with that
authority. Right. Yeah, there's clear structure in the Old Testament and of course in the New Testament and in the books of Timothy where we have the structure for the qualification for elders and bishops. Elders and deacons. But not in the way that the Catholics misconstrue, if that's the right word, misconstrue it, and ultimately use the structure to be something else. Sorry, my main point with that, when starting that, is in the old law, there's clearly structure. We have the fathers being the structure of the family and leading in the worship to God, and at this point with the church, we have the elders being able as shepherds and guides for the individual congregations, and so that structure for leadership of the righteous among them to be able to help all the rest is clear in the scriptures, and that is not the relationship that would be taking place of Jesus, as we've mentioned. So my point for all this as sort of tangent is I don't think this example is all that far off from the scribes and Pharisees, the way they were acting, the righteousness that they displayed. We've seen exposures of the corruption, and Jesus exposes the corruption of the scribes and Pharisees. There are so many physical aspects to focus on, but that was never, even in the Old Testament, when they had more physical aspects to focus on, that's never been the mentality, the focus that they need to have. The focus always was meant to be spiritual, and the way that it is easier for us to comprehend and follow in the new law which is why it's a better law for us, and we're able to focus more on the spirit because we do also have less distractions for physical.
So I understand how they got off. So that's the world, but that was the scribe's job. That was the priest's job.
So now we're going to try and end on a more positive note and focusing on what righteousness is expected of us and what we need to be able to exhibit in our lives. Beyond what Jesus has just said in the sermon, obviously those are aspects we need to be able to apply to our lives and what he's going to extrapolate on. But let's go and look at one in Matthew chapter 9, if you turn there. Matthew chapter 9. We'll be reading verses 10 through 17. So Matthew chapter 9, verses 10 through 17. And it came to pass, as Jesus sat at meat in the house, behold, many publicans and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto his disciples, Why eateth your master with publicans and sinners? But when Jesus heard that, he said unto them, They that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. But go ye and learn what that meaneth. I will have mercy and not sacrifice, for I am not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. Then came to him the disciples of John, saying, Why do we and the Pharisees fast oft, but thy disciples fast not? And Jesus said unto them, Can the children of the bride chamber mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken from them, and then shall they feast. Then shall they fast. No man putteth a piece of new cloth into an old garment, for that which is put in to fill it up taketh from the garment, and the rent is made worse. Neither do men put new wine into old bottles, else the bottles break, and the wine runneth out, and the bottles perish. But they put new wine into new bottles, and both are preserved. So what is the righteousness that the Pharisees are trying to display in verses 10 through 13? All right, they're trying to keep themselves pure and point out where sin could be, make others aware of it, and being separated from that. But ultimately, they miss the aspect of the spirit of the law needed, as Jesus points out in verse 13. So does this mean that we should put ourselves in situations that threaten our righteousness? No, obviously not. If we have, if we're in a position where we could be vulnerable to our righteousness being corrupted, then we need to be able to remove ourselves from a situation to uphold our purity for our relationship with God. But we should also be able to have confidence and strength in our relationship with God and understanding, so that we can be where the need is and to be able to help those who are lost as Jesus does. He tells them to go figure out what the spirit of the law is in Hosea 6, chapter 6, verse 6. Having mercy on and calling the sinners to righteousness is the extent of our righteousness that we should uphold, and not leaving them in the dark just for the selfishness of protecting ourselves. And in the Pharisees' case, for the way it would look to other men, they weren't even concerned with protecting themselves spiritually, or feigned it at least. So imagine, if you will, Jesus having that mentality so much that he stayed away from sinners and wouldn't have anything to do with them. Obviously, we would not have the way of life that we're able to. We wouldn't have the sacrifice that was needed for him to be able to take on all of our sins in order for them to be forgiven, for him to be our mediator. That is the spirit of the law that we have there. we're running out of time, so we'll go ahead and skip over verse the point I was making, verse 14 through 17. So let me do that. So ultimately, with the scribes and Pharisees, there'll be no point in tradition, in the practices that they uphold, if there's no spirit to it, if there's no actual righteousness that's being used with it. It's another example of knowing the spirit of the law to fully understand our actions and to fully know the purpose of what it is that we do. Jesus points out in verse 20 of Matthew 5, going back to Matthew 5, righteousness, or the definition of it, needs to return to understanding God's will and how He wants us to act beyond just the letter of the law, and much further beyond doing it for any reason of this earth, whether that be honor or money or just for your own pride. Jesus is here to fulfill the law that He gave, and is providing a lasting understanding of God's will to follow by being the living Word for us to continue to study and learn from every jot and tittle that we're that we've been given. So does anybody have any closing thoughts about the verses? All right, we'll go ahead and end there, and Lord willing, have our start our next lesson on Sunday morning. Thank you.